Hello, everybody. Welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin for another episode of Turning Towards Life. You are so welcome, as always, to this space, to our community, to being in the conversation with us. It's quite some holding you're giving us by being here, so thank you. We have a beautiful source today, provided by Justin, by the wonderful Rainer Maria Rilke, which we're going to read to one another and see how the conversation unfolds. Wonder at where we get to, where we go to, which bits of our lives we touch into. And essentially what happens is we become more able to see the world in what I received, Justin, as we had this term, this word last week, which was reverence. Somehow this is a reverence practice for me, holding these sources in reverence and holding each other in reverence and really listening to one another. So thank you for always being available to be listened to so that I can receive what it is when I listen. And thank you everybody for listening to us wherever you are. You might be doing the hoovering or packing the shopping away or wandering around the streets or lying in bed, whatever you're doing, you're very welcome here. And thank you, Justin, for always turning up with these wonderful sources.
It's very good to be here. We've been doing a lot of turning up, Lizzie, and it feels very good to turn up here with you. And to the many of you who are with us, whether you are joining us for the first time, as we know more and more people do, because you've been recommending this to other people, many of you who listen, or maybe you've been watching or listening all the way through the 8.5 years that we've been doing this, welcome. You said something in our last conversation which really touched me, Lizzie, that I wanted to bring in before we read this source from Rilke, because this is what we're about to read, in a way, is one of the more mysterious, less obvious kind of sources. I have no idea what kind of conversation it will evoke in us. And you brought into our last conversation, Lizzie, how incredibly important it is, if we want to live in contact with our lives, to be able to talk to one another about what's arising in us and the mysteries in us. That it's too easy to kind of skim across the surface of life and not really land in it, not really, of course, as is the title of this podcast, not really turn towards it fully. And one of the ways we get to do that is by having words between us that can help us come into contact with ourselves and one another, but also, like you've just been saying about speaking and listening, by speaking, I get known, I get received, I have to allow myself to be received, and then I come to know myself as I receive you receiving me. And it more and more seems to me that this is a necessary thing to do, at least now and again in our lives, is to be, bear witness to one another in this way. So this poem by Rainer Maria Rilke, which begins, "I'm much too alone in this world," is really like a pathway for us to walk together, and who knows where it will go. So you can all find the source in the show notes on our website at turningtowards.life, which is full of ways of being in contact with us and resources, and ways of finding out about the teaching we do, the kind of coaching that we teach, integral development coaching. We're going to be doing a lot of that in the coming months. And it's a place to find these words also in the show notes. Here it is. "I am much too alone in the world. I'm much too alone in this world. Yet not alone enough to truly consecrate the hour. I'm much too small in this world, yet not small enough to be to you just object and thing, dark and smart. I want my free will and want it accompanying the path which leads to action. And I want, during times that beg questions where something is up, to be among those in the know, or else be alone. I want to mirror your image to its fullest perfection, never be blind or too old to uphold your weighty, wavering reflection. I want to unfold. Nowhere I wish to stay crooked, bent, for there I would be dishonest, untrue. I want my conscience to be true before you. I want to describe myself like a picture I observed for a long time, one close up, like a new word I learned and embraced, like the everyday jug, like my mother's face, like a ship that carried me along through the deadliest storm.
Thank you, Justin. I am too, sorry, I am much too alone in this world, yet not alone enough to truly consecrate the hour. I am much too small in this world, yet not small enough to be to you just object and thing, dark and smart. I want my free will and want it accompanying the path which leads to action, and want during times that beg questions where something is up to be among those in the know, or else be alone. I want to mirror your image to its fullest perfection, never to be blind or too old to uphold your weighty, wavering reflection. I want to unfold. Nowhere I wish to stay crooked, bent, for there I would be dishonest, untrue. I want my conscience to be true before you. I want to describe myself like a picture I observed for a long time, one close up, like a new word I learned and embraced, like the everyday jug, like my mother's face, like a ship that carried me along through the deadliest storm.
Oh, one of the things I love about these words from Rilke, Lizzie, is it's a conundrum for me. I don't really know even quite where to begin with it, and yet I can feel myself deeply touched by every line, like filled with longing. And what struck me immediately about it was less the content, but this sense of the longing that we have that I really recognize. The longing in some way to know myself beyond the ways that I already, like the familiar ways I already know myself. However I know myself already is too small a story for what I really am. And then if I start to feel into that longing, like let me know my own depths, let me know my own mystery, and let me know yours, then I can start to make some sense of this poem in a way. Like, what is it to be too alone but not alone enough at the same time? What is it to be too small but not small enough at the same time? What is it to want to be in times that ask questions but also be in the know? What is it to be want to be with people and be alone simultaneously? Like, I think this is how I feel so much of the time. I long for so much, and what I'm sort of trying to inch my way towards is so much of what I really long for is not outside. It's not, I'm not going to get it by grasping for something or reaching. So there are things that I want that are outside, no doubt. But a lot of the times when I feel or have felt emptiness, what the thing that I'm longing for is actually here already. I'm just looking in the wrong place for it. And that's where, that's how I make sense of this second part. And I've talked to you before, and I've definitely talked here in this conversation about my very dear friend, Anna, who told me about an artist that she loves. And then one way or another, through conversation with her, I ended up going to an art gallery where the first thing in the gallery was this giant painting by the artist. The artist's name is Helen Frankenthaler. Helen Frankenthaler painted giant abstracts. And I went and did what Rilke says here, where he says, I want to describe myself like a picture I observed for a long time, one close up. Mm-hmm. And as I let myself, I stayed for a really long time, a couple of hours with this picture, which I'd really never done before in a gallery. Ordinarily would have seen it and walked past, like going, oh yeah, you know, there's lots of other pictures here to see. And I would have gone and seen all the pictures, and I didn't see anything else in the gallery at all, just this one. And as I stood and let myself really really soften and take this picture in. What started off like great big slabs of paint turned out to be filled with movement and motion and depth. And then I started to see things in it that I hadn't seen before. It became like a giant storm, and it became like the waves, and it became like a cave, and it became like sunlight. And I think Rilke's inviting us into that. I think he's asking us to notice all the ways that we feel not enough of something or too much of something, and all the ways we imagine if we got ourselves just wriggled in just the right space, then we'd nail it and we'd have our lives together. And he's telling us, he's asking us to look elsewhere. And it is quite well connected to the last conversation we had about coming at life as miraculous, delighting in joy and sorrow. And somehow it seems to me we're being asked to do something that is really quite countercultural, which is to treat the everyday texture of our lives and ourselves as something infinitely sacred and deep, and enter into it, dare to enter into it.
Yeah. I'm just amazed at Rilke. And I was doing the very thing that you were saying, Justin. I was thinking, oh, I would like to meet Rilke. I want to be in conversation with Rilke. And then I was like, but I am in conversation with Rilke, like looking for it somewhere, thinking, oh, well, I'll never get to meet Rilke. And what an amazing person Rilke must have been. But the gift of Rilke is here. This is the extraordinariness of having a source, is that the system, the human from which this expression came, is here because the expression is here. And so I'm just feeling the appreciation of that, and how Rilke's writing this isn't the words, but it's also what is evoked because the words are here somehow. So the feeling, like I had it too, Justin, when you were reading, I felt so moved and kind of mysteriously changed or something by the hearing of it in that moment. I'm not sure I can say how or what happened. All I know is that I was having an experience inside me that took me kind of to the end of my days, and that had me ask really sincere questions of the life that I have lived. And have I been true to what my life is for by the time it's done? Have I done well? You know what I mean? Have I been heartfelt? Have I been contactful? Have I been warm? Have I been kind? Have I? So this bit where Rilke says, "Nowhere I wish to stay crooked and bent," I feel like somehow transported me to, if I turn up crooked and bent, to the time when all of this is over, and I could have uncrookeded myself and unbent myself, that wouldn't be good for me. Like, I'm feeling called to that question of, you know, I think it was in last week's conversation, Justin, you were saying, can we get close enough as we encounter joy to feel into that this will all be lost, and that none of this is permanent and none of this is fixed and anything could change at any moment kind of feeling. Somehow that, combined with this longing to unbend myself and uncrookedize myself, I know that isn't a word, but I'm just going with it. That does feel dishonest to me. It does feel dishonest because I could have unbent myself. I know I can unbend myself. So how do I, and when he talks about this, I want to describe myself like a picture I observed a long time, one close up. I feel like that's also the work too, is to know myself, to know when I'm being controlling or manipulative or ungenerous in myself, to know where I'm coming from, a story of lack and clenchedness versus a story of flexibility and wondering and curiosity and depth. I feel like I really want to be honest. I want to be honest with myself. I want to be able to hear the truth and to tell myself the truth. And in the telling of the truth, to say yes to the path that's before me and that's behind me. And so this invitation to, I guess it is, again, just in reverence of something as familiar as my mother's face, turning into something that I would revere, that the everyday jug that I could just take for granted could become something that is worth me stopping and really seeing. And as you said, finding an ocean or a disaster or a beauty or a sunshine in it when it just looks like a jug, but to really be in connection with and to receive what's here. And like our source a few weeks ago, Justin, about, I think it was the Baal Shem that you brought, where everything has significance, treating all of these things in our lives, these people, ourselves, as significant, that we matter, that this plate matters, that this microphone matters, that my mug matters, and to feel in connection with the mattering. And but ultimately for me to matter enough to myself that I would be honest with myself, that I get to turn up at the end of my life and feel like I was honest, feel like I was true, and that my unbentness was in some way unbent. Like I made some headway with my own freedom, with my own joy, with my own way of being in the world that had me feel like I was the fullest expression of this one that I could be.
I'm starting to see as you're talking, Lizzie, that this work, this longing, I think, that many of us have to unkink ourselves, to open ourselves up so that there isn't something in us which is dishonest or untrue, so that we can meet the you. The you in this poem is filled with you. And it strikes me we can put lots of things in that place. Rilke might mean the one source of all existence. Rilke might mean that which gets called God, but it might also mean you, is he? I want to mirror your image to its fullest perfection, is he? I want to never be too blind or too old to uphold your weighty, wavering reflection. I want to unfold. There's nowhere that I want to stay crooked or bent, because there where I would be dishonest or untrue, and I want my conscience to be true before you. We can choose the scale of you that we say this to. And I was thinking whilst you were talking, had all of these parallel thoughts, one of which was, one of the reasons I think this matters is I think many of us live in a culture these days that asks us to be right rather than true. Like we want to be right. I want it to be right and you to be wrong. I want to have my fixed opinion. I want to divide myself. I want to be with the people who agree with me and against the people who disagree. We're polarizing all over the place and amplifying our sense of, well, I'm on the side of the right and you're on the side of the wrong. And I don't have to feel, I can feel innocent because I'm on the side of the right and you're the guilty one because you're on the side of the wrong. And this poem has asked something so different from us, because there's a dishonesty in that stance, in dividing everything. In the moment I describe myself as the one who's on the right and you're on the wrong, and I do that all over the place, I'm crooked, I'm dishonest, I'm untrue. It cannot be the case that that's the story. It cannot be the case. So then it is so marvelous. I was thinking about this as a practical exercise, not just as something metaphorical. In order for my conscience to be true before you, what would I say if I described myself as if I were a picture I'd observed for a really long time close up? There'd be a lot to say. What would I say if I then described myself like as if I were a new word that I'd just learned and embraced? What about if I described myself like the everyday jug? What if I describe myself in the same way I would describe my mother's face? What if I describe myself, and this one I find incredibly moving, in the same way that I might describe a ship that carried me through the deadliest storm? And then what happens if I do the same exercise but with you? What if I describe you to me so I can understand in a deeper way, as if you were like a picture I'd observed for a very long time close up, and so on. I feel like Rilke is making this extraordinary move that to say to that to be honest and to be true, and for our conscience to be clear, we cannot settle on one story about ourselves or anyone. We have to be willing to look like we would at a picture for a long time close up, and then find a way, even though it's only going to be the tiniest part of what there is to say, to find a way to inhabit that way of telling, and like the everyday jug, and like a mother's face, and like the ship in the storm. It seems to me such a sacred and necessary and important and life-giving task to look at each other and look at life that way, with that depth and sense of multiplicity, if we're going to have any chance of meeting the world in a truthful way, meeting life's possibilities fully.
As you're talking, Justin, I'm somehow seeing our human possibility of being kind of more space than object as ourselves. So as I recently, we were in a hospice because my mother-in-law is in the process, as we all are, but she's much closer to the process of not being in her body anymore. And we went into a hospice where she was staying for some treatment. And it just brought that to mind for me. And I was noticing on reflection, just by talking to you now, that as I was walking in there, I was holding an intention to be much more of a space than I was a person with lots of needs or something, like a person with lots of opinions or rights and wrongs or something. But what is it to meet whatever is coming now with wide open eyes and a wide open heart and a curiosity? And that's what came to me as you were speaking, because what's necessary there is to really not be attached to what's going on, who anybody is, whatever judgments I have, whatever opinions I have, whatever wants or shoulds are there. In some way, they felt like they needed to be a lot smaller in me than the spaciousness of, I don't know, I'm open, let's see, let's feel, let's wonder. And to put all of those things to the side, because anything else is actually quite unhelpful. And if I apply that same reverence, that same spaciousness to something which doesn't have sorrow and sadness and loss in it, but something joyful, how important it is to enter into that space with the same kind of spaciousness, where I get to notice in this conscience, in this truthfulness in me, I get to notice my judgments or my attachments or all the ways that I want things to be or to turn out or all the shoulds. I can just right-size them and know that there's a presence here, which is me, that can deepen and widen with intention and can hold a lot more complexity than the one who's filled with opinions and judgments and shoulds. And it should be this way, or it has to be that way or something. And I feel like that is one of our powers. You know, we're in this conversation about power at the moment, and I can do that. I know, I see myself doing that. And of course, there's loads of times I enter into things and I'm all clenched and fearful and worried and all the things. But I also know I can muster spaciousness, and I can keep intending on that. I can keep intending on my openness. I can keep intending and not treating it as some kind of perfection or destination version of me or something, but to let there be an awareness, a kind of a belief in my capacity to be spacious and to be open, that I can enter life and be there for it, like you're saying. And to be there for it, to me, is to notice the difference between when I'm being curious, open, a sense of wonder and not fixing anyone or myself down to any one story, but noticing that we are multitudes. Everybody is a multitude, a vastness. Everything is a vastness. And encountering the world that way, somehow it's not separate from the truthfulness, the uncrookedness. Like I feel crooked when I'm all needing something to be a certain way. And as I turn up spacious and with depth and allowing and wonder and curiosity, I feel unbent. I feel true and honest somehow. And yet it also takes honesty to know when my bentness is kind of serving me or keeping me in somewhere that I want to be because I feel safer or something. So it's a complex and unfolding process. But as this poem also says, I want to unfold. There is a beyondness that is available and true for us as humans, is that we are vast and we don't even know our vastness. So of course there's space to grow. There's things to experience that we don't understand yet. And often we have to have these times that come along that kind of break us open or smash us to smithereens. And then we have to know more of our vastness because of it. And maybe that's what the hospice is showing me as well, is something of the beyondness, of the vastness of us. And I'm really appreciating making contact with it here, because it's very big being in a place where we're directly encountering the potential that someone's body isn't going to be with us for very much longer, who we love. And we have to be there for it. Like you say, we have to turn up and actually be there instead of flailing around in all my worry or my panic or my something. I can turn up for these things and these times and these people, and it helps me to make contact with that strength in me that can, so that I can. And being in the conversation with you brings me that kind of strength that I can.
To know ourselves as space and relationship, Lizzie. Gosh, it's so different from knowing ourselves as Earth, as Rilke says, as an object or thing. I'm really, I'm feeling very touched about you and your family entering into this situation with your mother-in-law in the hospice, and what it is to come into it as space. And I got thinking about so many circumstances where we might contract because we're absolutely certain about what this is and what's happening, either because we're afraid or because we're being grandiose or something, like I'm right and you're wrong. And everything that you've just said is such an invitation. You kept on inviting us to widen the horizons, whatever it is we take ourselves to be, to widen and deepen and expand the sense of what we are and what we're in the midst of beyond our ordinary story. And I can see why that's called for, that our stories are often too small. And that's, so now as we circle back and come to the end of this conversation, I'm understanding the beginning in a new way. But Rilke says to us, I'm much too alone, but I'm not so alone that nothing's possible for me. I'm much too small, but I'm not so small that I'm just an object and thing. Both are true at the same time. He's asking us again and again and again in different ways to do what you've just been pointing to, which is to keep on undoing our fixed sense of what we are and what's happening so that we have a chance to unfold. And maybe this situation in the hospice, maybe it's like a picture you've observed for a very long time on close up, or maybe it's like a new word. I'm thinking of anything in our lives we can come up this way, and maybe it's like an everyday jug or our mother's face. And maybe it's also like a ship that's carrying us along through the deadliest storm. What a way of encountering life and allowing it to be resonant, and for us to be reverent, to have reverence towards it, as we were talking about last time. Well, it's amazing to be in this conversation with you, Lizzie and I am feeling deepened by it and very committed to continue to walking this path of conversation and inquiry, and also of doing what we're doing to see if we can, with one another's support, keep on opening the horizons inside ourselves and the horizons between us and the horizons of encountering the world. And I want to end by thanking everyone who's here with us. Thank you for doing that with us. If you stayed to the end of this conversation, or maybe even if you were here for part of it, you won't hear this bit, of course, and dropped away for being alongside it, a conversation that sometimes is very straightforward and sometimes invites us to enter into the more mysterious realms where we might feel the chambers of our heart growing and expanding and multiplying, so we have more of a chance to meet life with the depth and reverence and complexity which is called for. You can thank you, those of you who are here. Please feel very, very encouraged to share this conversation or any others with people who you love, who you think would benefit from it. You can always point them towards the turningtowards.life website, and a reminder that there you can also find lots of ways of getting this conversation into your inbox every week, or speaking to us. There's a contact button there now, or you can email us hello@turningtowards.life. And all being well, we will be back again next week with another source from you, Lizzie, and another conversation to enter into. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Justin.